You're with Annie on Solidarity Breakfast on 3CR, your community radio station, and we were just listening to a chat I had with Anthony from Mel's, Anthony Kelly from Mel's, about the intimidatory sort of preemptive policing operation, Strike Force Guard 3, that was focusing on activists intending to go to IMAC protests in Sydney, but it's a ongoing type of policing that people need to be aware of. And we're going to move now to Lisa Milner, who has written a book about, edited a book about the new theatre, and it's been launched. So this is a very important thing. G'day, Lisa. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Yeah, well, it seems to me that this is a good way to go, you know, having a discussion about preemptive and intimidatory police actions and then talking about the new theatre. It's sort of a perfect segue, because the new theatre wouldn't have had looking at the book and the history of the new theatre, which is radical theatre in Australia, ASIO had them in their sites. And in fact, many of the people who wrote histories about new theatre were able to use that file as a very useful historical resource.
Yes, that's right. The new theatre has been going in Australia since 1932, and for almost all of its history, the various branches and its members, and indeed some of the audience members, have been followed by ASIO and very much under the spotlight, as it were. There's been a lot of band plays that have been performed at the new theatre, especially in the Melbourne and Sydney branches that ASIO was trying to close down, but in most of the circumstances, they actually just kept on performing despite the legal bans.
Yeah, which is fascinating because, like you said, it's got a very early start, and in fact, I found the early history part of this book, because it's what you've done. You're an editor, and you've brought together. You tell them what you did.
Well, I've been studying the new theatre for a long time now, and have had the idea of bringing together other authors who had done research on various branches and aspects of the new theatre, as well as my own work, and commissioning some new works for this book. So it's a big book. There's 19 chapters of various parts of the new theatre. We take a tour through all the branches, which were in every capital city. Sydney's the only one going now, but the Melbourne one was very popular and was running until the 1970s. So it's a great collection of yarns. There's some fantastic stories about how this radical theatre came from an international working class theatre movement to bring radical and working class theatre to many, many Australians.
Well, it's on a practical level, it was really interesting to read about let's start with the Communist Party's connection to new theatre. That was an important element, wasn't it?
It was, and that's how it really started. In 1932, a Communist Party member, Jean Devaney, had travelled to Germany and Eastern Europe and Russia and came back thrilled with the theatre that she'd seen there and started the Workers' Arts Club in Sydney. It changed its name to the New Theatre League later on, but that's really what started it off. And all through its life, there were many members and fellow travellers of the Communist Party of Australia who were members of the New Theatre and also in its audiences. So, yes, it's always had that very close connection. But an even closer connection has been the labour movement in Australia. From the start, the new theatre saw itself really as part of the labour movement than as part of the Communist Party. And support came from left-wing unions like the Wharfies, the Siemens, the Miners, the BWIU. And it was really seeing itself as part of the labour movement.
which was all about bringing the voice of working people and ordinary people onto the stage, right?
Yes, that's right. And it's always had a very strong tradition of performing socially and politically relevant work. And yeah, not just about Australian issues, but international issues.
Yeah, so it had a broader view. And what I was leading to was that there was this struggle, which is a national struggle, I'd say, against an anti-intellectual sort of approach mindset, and what the people who were part of the theatrical groups were trying to do.
Yes, they encouraged Australian writers, particularly Australian women writers, to submit plays, and from that we've got some incredible legacies of authors like Mona Brand and Oriel Gray, who've gone on to be, you know, well-known Australian authors of plays. They also brought in very, very radical plays from overseas, particularly from England, Europe and America, where a new theatre tradition was also going on. So they were very, very explicit about the type of plays that they performed.
And the other thing that I found fascinating was the, on a practical level, the technical exciting sort of, and because the 30s was known for this, like there's this experimental element, the use of film, sound, lights, that sort of stuff. There was this battle between using that kind of stuff, which was kind of thought to be bourgeois, and social realism. So this was really a full-on sort of battleground, wasn't it?
Well, yes, and there were some great elements that the new theatre branches took from traditional theatre, but they also used a lot of German expressionism. They were very importantly part of the Living Newspaper story, which is
that's
about,
a fantastic. You know, the Living Newspaper thing was just incredible.
Yeah, they took a story from last night's world events or Australian events, and they wrote very, very quickly a play about it and performed it. And it was all about giving access to theatre to people who'd never normally gone to a theatre before. One of the most amazing things was their use of very, very interesting mobile performances. They put performances out on trucks, they went to street corners, they took their plays to factories, to walls, to parks, even to beaches. And they took the plays to the people, and that was very important for them.
Yeah, this is about, I know that there was, it seemed to be a way of bringing progressive politics to the working class, as it were, and ordinary people, but it's also about identity, isn't it, and the notion that that you are allowed to have, you're not just a drone, you can have an intellectual life.
Absolutely, and it was often castigated for that sort of thing, but, you know, it persisted. And although only the Sydney New Theatre is still in existence, all the other theatres gave so much to the people in their cities. As an example, one of the most amazing incidents of bringing theatre to the people was in 1952 when the Sydney New Theatre cast of a play they were performing took it out to a mine and performed 1,500 feet underground during a stay-in strike by Miners Federation members.
Oh, that's amazing. The other thing that's really amazing, of course, is that, I mean, it probably is a bit hard for people to realise just how stagnant and how oppressive Australian and Australian national life was while these people were building this fire, because they were and they were considered to be heretics effectively. But out of this work that the New Theatre did around the different states, a lot of really interesting people were involved, weren't they?
Oh, yes, and one of them we've actually just lost, Uncle Jack Charles, who had his funeral in Melbourne just a week or two ago. He started his theatrical light with the new theatre. In 1970, the amazing Dot Thompson, who was the leader of the Melbourne New Theatre, went to the boarding house where Uncle Jack and some other First Nations men were living and asked if they were interested in performing at a new theatre play. And his career started from that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's amazing, isn't it? So it was about going out there and actually telling real stories to real people and getting real actors.
That's right, and you know it's been the training house of many actors and also directors, producers, people who are interested in stage production have gone on to many other things.
And it's going to be that you've been really busy, Lisa, because you've had launches all over the place.
We had a fantastic launch to in Sydney at the New Theatre in Newtown in Sydney to mark the 90th birthday. And this Wednesday, the 9th of November, we've got the Melbourne book launch at the Trade Hall, which is a fantastic place for it, at 6:30. And everyone's welcome to come along. And it's going to be a big community event. We've got lots of people bringing yarns and a few songs and lots of different stories about the new theatre to that event.
Yeah, yeah, because it was a very, it was formative, wasn't it? The new theatre was like people arrived, when they people came there, they felt like they'd finally met people of like mind.
Absolutely, and indeed, I've dedicated the book to Norma Disher Hawkins, who turned 100 just last week, and she is she's been a new theatre member since the 1940s, and she's actually one of the most politically and culturally active people I've ever met. So I needed to dedicate the book to her.
Because that's the thing, isn't it? This was a space that really allowed women to work against the patriarchy, basically.
Yeah, and women held these theatres together, whether they were directors, producers, performers, writers or designers. And the theatre was really, really supportive of women and families coming into the new theatre branches and working. And they had so much support. They were able to juggle paid and volunteer work in the theatres. And it was in huge contrast to other gendered spaces in the theatrical spheres of the time.
Thanks for talking to us about it. Oh, it's a fabulous book. It's The New Theatre, and it's actually got a longer title. It's called New Theatre, The People, Plays and Politics Behind Australia's Radical Theatre. And, of course, you're going to be there on November the 9th on Wednesday, 6:30 at Trades Hall.
Yes, and it's published by Intervention,
yeah.
A not-for-profit publisher.
Yeah, yeah, people should remember that. Intervention's fantastic.
Yes. Thank you, Annie.
No worries.